Welcome to Beat Infertility, a podcast where we get real about infertility, empower you to take back control, and provide you with hope for the future. Ready? Here's your host, fellow infertility warrior, Heather Hooman.
Welcome to bonus episode 247. Today's guest is Dr. Maria Rothenberger, a psychotherapist who specializes in infertility. She and I will discuss everything you need to know about HeartMath. If you're interested in hearing her personal infertility story, you can find that way back in episode 18. You can visit Dr. Rothenberger online at www.drmariarothenberger.com. And as always, don't forget to visit our website for more information about this episode at beatinfertility.co/bonus247. Take a listen. Hi, Maria. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Heather. Good to talk with you again.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
It has. We're due.
We are going to be talking about something we actually briefly mentioned in at least one other episode, maybe a couple more, but that is HeartMath. And I'm sure that that must sound like a weird phrase to some people who are not familiar, and we are going to get into it in more detail in a minute, but I sort of want to lay the groundwork here with a bit of a foundation. What is emotional health? What is mental health, and how do they differ?
So first of all, yes, HeartMath is a weird word. So I'm glad we're defining it later. The difference between mental health and emotional health involves at the very core, mental health involves the thoughts that we think, and emotional health involves the feelings we feel. For example, I could think the sky is blue and it could feel like a happy thing to someone. But I remember growing up in Southern California when I would beg for rainy days for relief from like the sunshine and heat. And in that case, the sky is blue could produce an emotion of disappointment or frustration, right? So the thought is the same, but the emotion is different. They are linked, though, of course, as you can see. I like to reference Dr. Joe Dispenza, who says thoughts are the language of the brain and emotions are the language of the body. And of course, they inform one another. So mental and emotional health involves the way that we process the thoughts and the feelings. So now we've defined what mental function is and what emotion function is. But now the health part is how we process thoughts and feelings. So whatever is experienced, processing them well is the degree to which one is experiencing mental or emotional health. So like if I ruminated over and over about how the sky is blue, and now I'm going to be like hot and sweaty, and my car is going to be hot when I get in it, and now I can't run outside like I wanted, and on, that's considered an unhealthy response to the thought. And it produces a negative emotional reaction, right? Once we have the emotional reaction, a healthy response might be, oh man, now I'm sad. I'm going to go watch a funny video now, or read a book, or do some yoga, or whatever. An unhealthy reaction might be to try to run away from the emotion by overeating, or drinking, or lashing out at someone. You get the picture. So that's the main difference.
What misconceptions might infertility warriors have about emotional and mental health, and what are the facts?
So there are several, but I'd like to highlight a couple here in terms of misconceptions. So one, experiencing mental and emotional distress or difficulty does not mean weakness. And I know that you and I, Heather, talked about that 100 times, right? Like, it does not mean that. It doesn't mean that you are less than, quote unquote, or anything like that. Also, a medical and life crisis like infertility will derail even the, you know, happiest rose-colored glasses wearing Pollyanna out there. So if you're experiencing that, mental or emotional distress or both, likely both, because they go together, you're quite normal. The second misconception that I want to highlight is that having mental and emotional difficulty doesn't necessarily mean bad. So like I'm making air quotes here, and I distinct that from the first misconception because we like to talk about positive and negative thoughts and emotions. But as we will see in the rest of this interview, especially, that doesn't mean that they're bad or good. So thoughts and emotions, I like to think of as just, they're just guides. It's what you do with them that matters. So if you're having a negative emotional or mental state, it's what you do with them that matters most. It doesn't mean that they're bad. It just means they're guides. They're guiding you to do something different than what you're doing.
Let's move into the main topic, which is heart math. Let's start off with a simple definition. What is heart math?
Yeah, and it's a nice segue too, because here's what you can do with negative thoughts and emotions. So it's just one technique. There are many, right? But here's one that we're drilling down on today. I'm happy to do. So what is heart math? Heart math is a collection of techniques and technologies designed to improve physiological, mental, and emotional well-being. So not only does this address mental and emotional health, but it affects physiological well-being as well. Obviously, the heart is a physical thing, right? Because I'm a mental health practitioner, I'm drawn to it for the mental and emotional aspects. But the research has shown repeatedly that there are sometimes profound physiological improvements for folks who use the techniques.
And why is it called heart math? That crazy word.
This is the weird part. But it's not really weird when I define it for you, you'll see. So the researchers at the Heart Math Institute obviously research the workings of the heart, right? So they're looking at that physical organ, but they're also looking at the energetic aspects of the heart. So they're looking at the biology of the heart and the energetic aspects of the heart. And they like to say, typically, of course, when people think of the heart, they think of emotion, which is at the core of the heart math techniques. So the Institute highlights in particular the more energetically higher emotional states like compassion and forgiveness, courage, and of course, love. It's super cool because they're able to measure the effects of emotional states, which brings me to the math part. The technology used in heart math is essentially biofeedback. And the math inherent in heart math are the various calculations for determining one's heart coherence, which we'll get into in a little bit. Basically, it's the experience of emotion. Whether one is non-coherent or coherent is their experience of emotion. Again, we'll get into that later. Personally, heart math is one of my favorite techniques and technologies because it marries my left brain sciencey side, you know, and my right brain artsy side. I like to say my left brain is like 1 + 1 = 2. And my right artsy side is like 1 + 1 =, I don't know, giraffe. But in heart math, even the right brain concepts are brought to a mathematical equation. So inherently left brained folks will dig it too.
A heart math technique, simply types of relaxation or meditation techniques?
No, although the physiological changes are similar, and you know I'm a giant meditation freak, right? So they're similar to relaxation and meditation in terms of like engaging the parasympathetic nervous system, et cetera. But the biggest difference in heart math is that heart math techniques and technologies incorporate intentional positive affect, meaning that you intentionally create a positive emotion, and that's quite different than meditation or relaxation, because meditation and relaxation are very neutral, right? So you're staying very present and noticing things in your present world, and it's a very neutral response. Using the technology myself with clients, I can see the difference when clients start with a very mindful thing like breath work. And then when they move into positive emotion, you can see an even greater difference in their graphing. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But yeah, so it's not just relaxation or meditation. The positive emotion is the main difference.
How are the heart and brain connected?
So yeah, so this is a very important part of the decades of research with heart math, because obviously, you know, the brain is a little bit important, right? Back in the 60s and 70s, researchers noted that the brain has a thinking capability. And in fact, today we know that there are neuron-like cells in the heart that transmit information to the brain. In fact, far more information is sent from the heart to the brain than vice versa. There's a cool graphic, by the way, on the HeartMath website to depict the communication between the heart and the brain. So the heart communicates to the brain in four ways. It communicates electrically. So that's neurological, right? So all our neurons are electrical. Biophysical, it's like a pressure wave, like you see on an ECG. Biochemically, so that's obviously through chemicals, neurotransmitters, chemistry in the body. And then energetically, that's electromagnetically. There's a study that's been repeated many times over the years that I love to tell people about because it takes this connection one step further. At the very beginning of this research project, the researchers from HeartMath took folks into a lab and they hooked them up to a computer. And the computer showed different pictures. And the pictures were designed to elicit a negative emotion or a positive emotion. And interestingly, about 3 to 5 seconds before the picture showed up on the screen, the heart had a reaction. Now, this is weird, right? This is very bizarre. So literally, if you're looking at something like, I don't know, a puppy or a kitten, you know, and it's supposed to elicit this positive emotion, before the image even showed up on the screen, the heart was showing a more coherent reaction. So this has been repeated over and over and over. So basically, the heart has a reaction, transmits it to the brain, and then the brain has a mental reaction. They like to connect this heart reaction to intuition. Right. So when you have that intuitive sense, and I talk about intuition a lot in my own work, that is an instantaneous reaction. And then that is transmitted to the brain so that you have thoughts and you're able to process it.
Despite being a proponent of listening to podcasts, I am very much a visual learner. And I was going to say it if you didn't, that people should check out the graphic on the HeartMath website. It definitely reeled me in.
Yeah. 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 I'm definitely visual too. And it's a really great graphic, very, really powerful information.
There's also a lot of information on there about coherence. What is that and what is it not?
Yeah, this is, no pun intended, but this is at the heart of HeartMath, right? Coherence. Okay. So basically just the word coherence, it's just a term that means that all parts are working synchronously, right? So for example, in the mental health industry, we say that somebody is coherent if their thoughts and their words go together. So someone who's coherent might say, this really sad thing happened to me. I'm now feeling sad. I'm telling you about it. That's a coherent thing. If somebody says, this really sad thing happened and I'm great, life's awesome, they're not really eliciting or they're not really displaying coherence. Coherence in the HeartMath context means synchronicity between our physical, mental, and emotional systems. And you can see this when graphing one's heart rate variability. You'll see on the technology a graph that shows this very smooth up and down wave sine. They call it a sine wave pattern, like you probably remember from high school geometry if you're not a mathematician. So you'll see it, a very smooth graph. Again, you can look on the website, HeartMath Institute's website. And emotions have a very profound impact on one's coherence. I'll tell one quick story. When I was practicing the HeartMath techniques myself, I was in the very beginning, I hooked myself up to this technology and I was practicing thinking about different things to elicit emotions. Right. And I wanted to look at the difference that the graph showed as it was, and this is in real time as it's looking at your heart rate variability. So I was thinking about my dachshund, right? My dog. And I recently just got pissed at him because he peed on my carpet. Pissed, pee. See what I did there? So he peed on my brand new carpet, right? And I'm like bent out of shape. And my heart rate variability, my coherence, the synchronicity between my physical, mental, and emotional systems was out of whack. And you can see it graphed. It's very jagged and not very smooth. And then I started thinking about the day that we adopted him. And you could instantly see the graph change from this very jagged, kind of not coherent, very jagged graphing to this very large, wide, sweeping, smooth up and down waves. So we'll get into why that's important, but that's what coherence means.
Can you explain heart rate variability and why that's important?
Right. So the heart rate variability is how we determine whether one is coherent or not, whether one is experiencing heart rate coherence or not. So heart rate variability basically is the measure of the beat-to-beat changes in heart rate. Scientists and physicians consider heart rate variability to be an important indicator of overall health and fitness. It's a marker of physiological resilience and behavioral flexibility, which is two things that are really important in infertility, right? So if you have unstable heart rate variability or too little variability, it can be an indicator of low physiological functioning. So the most important part in the context of heart math is that heart rate variability is an indicator of the dynamics between the autonomic nervous system and the heart-brain interactions, the synchronization between all of those. So when I say autonomic nervous system, I mean parasympathetic nervous system, sympathetic nervous system. It means that when we look at heart rate variability, we're able to determine how depleted one's autonomic nervous system is, how the degree to which they're experiencing chronic stress, their overall resiliency ability. And just looking at someone's heart rate variability is quite uninvasive. It's not like being wanded every other day, right? So it's just noticing what your heart rate is doing. Also, just a little thing here, athletes out there will be happy to know that improved heart rate variability, more synchronistic or more coherent heart rate is associated with improved physiological performance. Also, mental performance and emotional intelligence improve. Basically, everyone gets a healthy dose of health when you are working on more heart rate, improved heart rate variability. So those triggers and your overall thoughts about infertility are far more manageable. It's super cool.
How are heart rate rhythm patterns and emotions connected?
So again, I wish I could show a visual here, but and you can actually probably pull this up on the Heart Math Institute's website too. But so for the purpose of just now, imagine, again, going back to like high school math, if you can imagine an XY axis graph, remember those from high school? There are like four quadrants, right? So imagine a plus sign, and there are four quadrants when you're looking at this plus sign, right? So imagine in the upper left quadrant is a state of high arousal or energy and negative affect or negative emotion. So emotions like frustration and anger would go there. In the lower left quadrant would be low arousal and negative affect. So emotions like depression and sadness would go there. So all on the left side of this quadrant is negative affect. One's much more energetic. One is a lot less energetic, like depression and sadness. In the upper right quadrant would go high arousal, positive affect. So things like exuberance, excitedness, jovialness would go there. And in the bottom right quadrant would go low arousal, positive affect, emotions like joy, gratitude, peacefulness, and appreciation. What the HeartMath Institute has found over the decades is that we know that when folks are in the right side of the graph, of this XY axis. So whether they're in the upper or the lower quadrant, as long as you're on the right side, so that's positive affect, they have more heart coherence. So that's how heart rate rhythms and emotions are connected. When you elicit a more positive affect, whether it's excitedness or gratitude, your heart rate rhythm, your heart rate variability patterns improve and they're more smooth and a sine wave-like pattern on the graph.
And what is the role of breathing in heart math?
Breathing is the first step in most heart math techniques. Again, this is why I like to highlight this too, because breathing is inherent in relaxation techniques and meditation and things like that, right? It's a way to begin moving out of a stressed state and into a coherent state. And I've actually found that when I work with clients, that people begin generating a coherent state with breathing alone. The thing with the breathing is that, and people who meditate will find this too, it's really difficult to sustain the same breathing pattern for a long period of time because it's primarily a mental focus strategy, which is like meditation, right? So how heart math is different is that they ask you to start moving out of your stressed state by breathing because it's quite simple. And then the next step almost always involves emotion. So the next step is to intentionally generate a positive emotional state, like I did with thinking about my dog, how he peed on my carpet, but then I was thinking about how the day that we adopted him, that was intentionally generating this memory of a positive emotion. So the role of breathing is essentially in HeartMath is essentially just to begin moving out of that stressful, non-coherent state. And then you add the techniques on top of that.
Okay, so far we've had a lot of definitions, a lot of complexity, but how can listeners actually practice HeartMath on their own?
Oh yeah, girl, we just scratched the surface. There's so much to know about HeartMath. I just want to teach what's called the quick coherence technique. It is super simple, very simple. It's a 1 minute thing that anybody can do at any time. I suggest that people practice this several times a day to begin teaching your body to have more heart coherence. So basically what you do is you begin slowing down your breathing like you would if you were beginning to meditate. They say the optimal breathing pattern is an inhale for 5 seconds and an exhale for 5 seconds. But the most important thing is that you find a breathing pattern that's a little bit slower than you would normally do. And you practice that for a few breaths in and a few breaths out. And then the next step, there are only 2 steps. So slower breathing for a few breaths. And then the second step is to generate that positive affect or positive emotion. So you'll want to do that by thinking about something that is a very positive memory or having a positive emotional state like gratitude. So you're thankful for something. You simply hold on to that for about a minute and that's it. If you were hooked up to this biofeedback technology through HeartMath, you would be able to see that your heart rate rhythms, your heart rate variability is much healthier.
Should listeners find a HeartMath practitioner? And if so, how?
So it's not necessary. Certainly you can do something like the quick coherence technique or other techniques that you can find on the HeartMath website. People can practice techniques on their own for sure. And you actually could even purchase some of the technology on your own. And even that's not necessary. If you like looking at your own, if you like something objective, like technology or other softwares that you can use, then it's perfectly reasonable to pick that up on the website. But you can do that without that. You can have a subjective experience of a calmer state and a positive affect and know that your heart rate variability is healthier. The benefits, of course, of finding a practitioner are being able to see how the technology works and seeing it work. If you find a practitioner too, what they'll generally do is measure your progress over time, right? So you'll get to see that you are able to generate coherence much quicker, that you stay in a coherent state much longer. The technology with a practitioner involves like games and things that you can play. It's really quite fun to see how your heart rate variability improves over time. So that's a benefit there, and you can certainly do that. If you want to find a practitioner, you can just go to the HeartMath website and find a practitioner on that website. Or Psychology Today probably has folks that indicate they are HeartMath practitioners.
As you mentioned, we are just scratching the surface here. Is there anything else you'd like to add about HeartMath?
Yeah, one thing I want to drill down on briefly is we talked about the 4 ways that the heart communicates to the brain. And I just wanted to highlight quickly the electromagnetic communication between the heart and the brain. One really super cool thing that the HeartMath researchers have been able to measure is the electromagnetic field emanating from the heart, not just to the brain, but even outside of the body. This is really cool. And I want to talk about why this is important. So essentially what they've found is that the electromagnetic field emanating from the heart outside of the body emanates about 3 feet. Now, they think that it actually emanates farther than that, but they've only been able to measure 3 feet. So we'll just say emanates 3 feet outside of the body. If you can, that's just mind-blowing by itself. Why I want to highlight this, why I feel like this is important, is because I know it's my life purpose to help as many people in this life as possible. And so when I think about that, I think about when you are emanating this electromagnetic field of coherence, what it means is that if you are within somebody else's electromagnetic field or they're in yours within this 3 feet, they can pick up on your heart coherence or heart incoherence, and you can pick up on theirs. So when you are practicing becoming more coherent, other people are able to pick up on your coherence and they have a more positive affect, they have more positive emotion. And as we talked about, there's a positive physiological response too. Greater health, greater performance, greater mental clarity. And I just feel like it's one other way, just one more way to pay it forward.
What words of hope would you offer to listeners who want to improve their emotional and mental health?
So, you know, when you ask this question, I always like to end with a quote, or most of the time I end with a quote. I am currently doing a compassion series on my blog, and this quote came up by Carl Rogers. Carl Rogers is a pretty prominent psychologist. He said this quote that I just love. He says, "The curious paradox is that when I accept myself just as I am, then I can change." And so I love this because even though in this context, you might have a more incoherent state in your day-to-day life, when you're able to just accept, okay, that's happening, that's where I am right now, you're able to accept what is, then you open up more this ability to create some change in a softer, more compassionate way towards yourself. And that, of course, being more compassionate is a heart coherent state of being.
Maria, thank you so much for your time, as always.
You're so welcome. Thanks for the invite again.
Hey, Infertility Warrior, it's Heather. This episode of Beat Infertility is brought to you by me. Regular listeners of the show know that I struggled during my infertility journey with everything from finding the right clinic to advocating for a protocol customized to my body to allowing infertility to consume my entire existence and everything in between. In other words, I've been where you are. Now that I'm on the other side and have interviewed hundreds of other warriors and fertility experts, I've discovered the fastest way to realize your dream of becoming a parent is to get educated, regain hope, build resiliency, learn self-advocacy skills, and partner with someone who's been there. Whether you're an infertility newbie or a seasoned veteran, it would be my honor and privilege to provide, as one client put it, unwavering support with fully engulfing and genuine empathy. If you'd like to learn more or schedule a free 30-minute call to discuss how I can support you during your infertility journey, go to beatinfertility.co/hope. Now, back to the show.
Thank you for listening to Beat Infertility. Join our free private support community at beatinfertility.co/app. If you find yourself needing additional support, visit our paid programs at beatinfertility.co/hopeyou. If you'd like your story to be considered for a future episode, please fill out the form at beatinfertility.co/contact. Until next time.